In Acts the 18th chapter, we're continuing our study of the Apostle Paul as he travels on his second preaching tour. And many fascinating things, especially as we come to the third preaching tour. We want to do that, hopefully, time permitting, in our study this morning. But we have continued with the Apostle Paul as he has traveled from the city of Athens, then over to the city of Corinth, where Timothy and apparently Silas from 2 Corinthians chapter 9, evidently joined him. Now, evidently, we have learned from 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, in the first two or three verses there, that Paul did remain at Athens for a period of time alone, yet having sent back word to Silas and Timothy to come to him with all speed. And evidently, we learn that Timothy did indeed join Paul at Athens as he sent Timothy back from Athens to those in Thessalonica. Now, we know that the apostle had trouble in Thessalonica. Persecution, essentially being driven out of the city. And so, in his work there among the Jews, it was very much challenged. But as Paul worked among the Gentiles, and we're not certain exactly how long, there was the establishment of a church in Thessalonica, and in view of the persecution that obviously was very intense, Paul mentions it a number of times in the epistles to those of Thessalonica, that he's concerned about how they fare in the midst of this kind of persecution. Sending Timothy back, then Silas and Timothy joined Paul in Corinth, and the report is good, and Paul is refreshed as chapter 3 of 1 Thessalonians reveals unto us. But then he's on his way now back to Antioch of Syria. And we noted in our study, I believe, last time, that he traveled to Ephesus, but only for a short time. And we want to mark this in our Bible because there are only about three verses that mention his visit to Ephesus on the second preaching tour. We note that later he spent a great deal of time in Ephesus, but not on this tour. In Acts chapter 18, reading beginning in verse 19, it says, "And they came to Ephesus, and he left them." Now left who? Aquila and Priscilla left them at Ephesus. "But he himself entered into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. And when they asked him to abide a longer time, he consented not, but taking his leave of them and saying, 'I will return again unto you if God will,' he set sail from Ephesus." Now just a short time, evidently, at Ephesus, but yet very productive. They want him to stay. He has to move on. His aim is to get back to Jerusalem and then on back to Syria, where he has been sent forth from. Now, as we continue in this second journey, we learn that Paul, over a period of about 3 years, as we've seen, visited a lot of places in Asia Minor and in European cities. The Jews, for the most part, resisted the work that he engaged in. Congregations, however, were established in several places. During this preaching tour, he has covered a lot of territory. 2,700 miles, 1,200, nearly 1,300 by sea, 14 plus by land. Now, when I think of travel, and I think of the comfort of travel that we have now, it would be a challenge to travel this far, would it not? But they traveled by ancient means, and yet the work of the Apostle Paul was very successful in this first and this second, now, preaching journey. Now, as we continue our study of Paul's second journey, we want to look at the questions over this section. Now, you have Paul's second journey, Lesson 47, questions. All right, please use these questions as a means of reviewing the things that we talk about. It takes us a little while to get to them, so hopefully you'll have 2 or 3 weeks to get these filled out before we go over them. But question number one, in Acts chapter 15, verses 1 through 31, we read about the council on circumcision that was held in what city? Now, I want to elaborate just a moment on that word council. We don't see that word necessarily used in the text, I don't believe, but it's been called the Jerusalem Council or the Jerusalem Conference, as if what's taking place in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 15 is some kind of a meeting by the apostles and the elders of the church in Jerusalem, where they legislate some decision that they've made upon the churches. And that's not the purpose of that gathering. And I want you to notice that very distinctly as you read through the 15th chapter of Acts. What was the problem? The problem was circumcision, circumcising Gentiles in order to save them. The question, whether or not God had ever required Gentiles to receive circumcision in order to be saved. Now, I just flipped the button inadvertently, but you weren't looking, Richard. So, in what city did this occur? In the city of Jerusalem. That's right. Why does this meeting take place in Jerusalem, Jonathan? All right, they claimed the authority being sent down from Jerusalem, and that simply was not true. Who remained in Antioch of Syria after the first journey was completed? Barnabas did. That's right. Paul and Barnabas were there for a while. Paul leaves, and of course Barnabas and John Mark leave on a second tour, as Paul and Silas leave on a second tour. Number three, at this point, about 10 years had passed since the conversion of whom? The Gentiles. That's right. And of course, that's the first Gentile household of Cornelius, and we read about that found where? Acts chapter 10. Very good. Question number four. Judean brethren came from Antioch to Syria teaching that circumcision was necessary in order to gain what? Chris? Peters?
Necessary to gain salvation.
That's right. God had never taught circumcision upon the Gentiles, period, much less in order that they be saved. Who traveled with Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem from Antioch in order to confer with the apostles and elders, and let me add, why? Who traveled with them? All right, Judas and Silas. Acts chapter 15, if you'll go back to that, and notice beginning in verse, where is it? 27. Yes, verse 27. Thank you. We have sent therefore Judas and Silas, who themselves also shall tell you the same things by word of mouth. Now the question, why? Why is it that certain ones go with Paul? Why do I have Titus on there?
Because it says to Jerusalem from Antioch, not from Jerusalem.
Oh, okay. Okay. From Jerusalem to... That helps when you read the question. Right. To Jerusalem from Antioch, going up to Jerusalem from Antioch. Not from Antioch or from Jerusalem.
They're going to Jerusalem from Antioch.
Going to Jerusalem from Antioch.
So Titus is the representative of the church in Antioch.
Yeah, gotcha. Right, I was curious why we didn't have unity on our answer there, and that's why. So we see then that in the text, as someone has mentioned from verse 27, we've got Judas and Silas going from Jerusalem down to Antioch with letters. Now, why do we have all of this travel with the accompaniment with the Apostle Paul? Why do people go from Antioch to Jerusalem with Paul?
To confirm what they have to say.
That's right. That's right. Why do people then come from Jerusalem after this meeting down to Antioch?
Same reason.
To confirm that what was said was true. The Jerusalem church was the center of Christianity among Jews, that's right, among Jews. Now, I want to say something about this word. Christianity is not a Bible word. It's in the questions that we have because the fellow who wrote the questions put that in there. I should have probably modified that. We use this word because of what it represents to us today. Christianity is not a Bible word. We read about people being Christians. Today we think of Christianity as a system of religion. And the Bible is the scheme of redemption, the system of religion. The word Christianity seems to represent a number of systems of religion, but that's just not, that's not really accurate. Jerusalem church was the center of the church among those who were Jews. Now, obviously, on the heels of that, the Antioch church was the center of Christianity, or the church, among the Gentiles. That's right. The church in Antioch was predominantly made up of Gentiles. Yes.
But what do we mean by the center?
Well, it was kind of the hub of where it went out from. It began in Jerusalem. It was to be preached in Jerusalem first, and then Judea, Samaria, and the othermost parts of the world. But from Antioch, we see of three preaching tours scattering the gospel among the Gentiles from them. And that's the account that we have of some of the acts of some of the apostles. We don't know what the other apostles did.
I personally don't like those questions at all.
Yeah?
Just it makes it seem like Jerusalem was, you know,
sponsoring church for everybody. Yeah, well, poor choice of words. But what we do see in the scriptures, it became much like Ephesus did, a center in the sense that the gospel went out through all of Asia from there. What we see Antioch doing is sending the gospel throughout several parts of the world from themselves by the Apostle Paul and those who traveled with him. Number 8, in the cases of Titus and Timothy, was it established that circumcision was not a requirement under the law of Christ in order to be what?
Saved.
In order to be saved. That's right. Now we know that Titus was not circumcised at all. Why?
He wasn't
Jewish. Titus was not Jewish in any respect. Timothy was instructed by Paul to be circumcised. Why? Because his mother was a Jew. That's right. Of course, this becomes an accommodative thing. A letter from the apostles and elders was drafted to be given to whom? This takes us back to Acts 15.
Well, specifically addressed to the church in Antioch, but the answer is the Gentiles.
All right, to the Gentiles generally. If you want to notice in the text, it says beginning in verse 23, and they wrote thus by them, the apostles and the elders, brethren, unto the brethren that are of the Gentiles. And then it says, in Antioch, Syria, Cilicia, greeting. So this instruction was generally given to the Gentiles, churches among the Gentiles, that this was not to be bound upon those who were Gentiles. Number 10. The men returned from Jerusalem and read the letter to the church located where? Richard, this gets to where you were. It was originally read to those in Antioch. It was addressed to several, but it was originally addressed to the church in Antioch, who later visited Antioch and was rebuked by Paul for separating himself from the Gentiles when the Jews arrived. And this is contingent upon what I believe to be an accurate chronology of the events as they transpired. On the heels of this meeting, you have the event that we're referring to here occurring, and naturally I'm going to ask you, in what passage do we read about that? What event? Who visited Antioch?
Peter
did. That's right. And what mistake did Peter make? Peter messed up. Okay, well, in a very real sense, let's just kind of flip that a little bit. He was eating among the Gentiles, and then he restrained himself from doing that and associated himself with the Jews as he was persuaded by them. Now, somebody in previous studies, when we've talked about this, we asked the question, why did Peter do that? And someone said peer pressure, and that's really it. Peter was from a Jewish background. He's associating now with Gentiles, and Jews who have become Christians come up and he disassociates himself with these Gentiles. And what did Paul say to Peter? What did Paul say he said to Peter? Alright. Alright, he opposed him. Why? He's a hypocrite. He stood condemned. Can you imagine in your mind the Apostle Paul saying to the Apostle Peter, you're a hypocrite, you stand condemned. Now, why does that astound us so? There's a reason we need to examine that.
Peter preached to Cornelius, and he had that vision.
All right, he preached to Cornelius, and then he explained that in Jerusalem to the Jews who called in question his association with the Gentiles. But even prior to that, what had Peter done? Prior to Cornelius in Acts 10. Pardon me? Acts chapter 2. Yes. He had quoted the words of Joel that whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And we also note that he had, in preaching to those Jews, said, for to you is the promise, your children, and to all that are afar off, which would include the Gentiles. And then we have another incident that, as we see, Bruce, you mentioned Galatians chapter 2, the events of Acts chapter 15, who came to the defense of the Gentiles? It was the Apostle Peter, and he's citing the evidence of what he did among the household of Cornelius. Number 12, the second missionary journey of the apostles, or the Apostle Paul, lasted for approximately 3 years. During this time, Paul wrote what two books of the New Testament? First and Second Thessalonians. Where did he write them from? Corinth. That's right. Very good. I don't know, and we mentioned this Wednesday night, I don't know that the evidence is compelling as to which one was written first. But they were written very closely, close together, from the city of Corinth. Number 13, Paul and Barnabas separated because of a disagreement about whom? John Mark. What had John Mark done?
Had continued with them on the first journey.
All right, they'd taken him on the first journey, but he messed up. What did he do? In Perga, Pamphylia, he went back. Did not continue with them, evidently going back to Jerusalem. Number 14, who did Paul take with him when he left to go toward Tarsus? Now, this was on the second preaching tour. Who does he now take with him? Silas. That's right. Somebody said it. Number 15, who did Barnabas take with him when he left to go toward Cyprus? All right, he took took John Mark. Barnabas took John Mark. Now, one of the things that I want to note just here is we no longer follow the travels of Barnabas and John Mark. We're now following the travels of the Apostle Paul. But we do note that there are travels of Barnabas and John Mark. And I think it would be a pretty safe assumption to assume that many of the other apostles were doing the same thing in order that the gospel might be preached to every creature. Yes.
What do we conclude from the fact that Paul didn't want to take him, but Barnabas was okay with continuing?
That's hard to answer because it enters into the realm of speculation. He might have assumed that Barnabas was a quitter. He might have assumed that he didn't have the drive or the attitude toward the work that was needed to accomplish it. I don't know. There are a number of considerations. Yes.
And also, as I recall, Barnabas was related to John Mark.
That is true. Barnabas was related to John Mark. So that might have become an issue. Don't know. Sometimes, as we know, other folks can teach family members better than we can. So for Barnabas and John Mark to pair up, Paul may have thought it to be a bad idea. Now, question. Does this disagreement, this is an important question, does this disagreement become a permanent rupture in the relationship between Paul and Barnabas.
We see later that Paul praised Barnabas as far as his work.
All right, does it become a permanent rupture between Paul and John Mark?
No.
No, it does not. We see that in the future they had a very good relationship together and worked together and are praised. Who joined Paul and Silas in Derbe and Lystra? All right. Timothy did. Timothy did. Number 17. What was delivered to the churches during this journey? All right, the decrees from Jerusalem regarding the Gentiles. Number 18, Paul was forbidden to travel into what area? All right, forbidden to travel into Asia. Number 19, very good. What did Paul receive that caused him to go to Troas? Pardon me? A vision, that's right. The Macedonian call, he saw in a vision to go over into Macedonia and help us.
I have a question about that.
All right.
It looks like he got that vision at Troas, so it didn't seem like that's what caused him.
Yeah, the question doesn't appear to be worded properly, does it? What did Paul receive that caused him to go from Troas, the Macedonian call? Yeah, I agree with you. Number 20, who joined Paul at Troas?
Luke
did. How do we know that?
Pronouns.
Pronouns, thank you. Number 21, Lydia and the jailer were converted at what city?
Philippi.
All right, Lydia was from Thyatira, but she's traveled to Philippi and there learns the gospel. Number 22, what book was later written to the brethren in Philippi? Now that's a no-brainer.
Galatians?
No, that's incredibly wrong. The book of Philippians. Number 23. Oh, by the way, while we're on that, we've got to make that a little bit more challenging than just to say the book of Philippians was written to Philippi. Where was it written from? Where was Philippians written from? Anybody? All right, it was written from prison. Very good. We find that this book was written at the conclusion, or after the conclusion of Paul's third preaching tour, when he had been arrested in Jerusalem and appealed his case to Rome. And from a Roman prison, he writes four books that are called, strangely enough, the prison epistles. And what are they? You know one of them. Let's add the other three. Ephesians, Colossians, and who said it? Philemon? Yes. Ephesians, Colossians, Philippians, and Philemon. All four of these books written during the first Roman imprisonment. Macedonia was once the home of what two Greek leaders? You know this from our previous way back studies.
Philip of Macedonia.
All right. Philip and his son, Alexander the Great. Number 24, the majority of the congregations in Macedonia were made up mostly of what group of people? Now that's a no-brainer question too.
Gentiles.
All right, made up predominantly of Gentiles. Number 25, I think. Yes, the largest city in Macedonia was what? John, we talked about that. It was Thessalonica. Philippi was a very important city, but Thessalonica was the largest city. You know, sometimes when I think of capital cities, we sometimes think that the capital would be the largest city, and that's not necessarily true. When we look at our own state, Sacramento being the capital of California, it's not the largest city in California. I had difficulty with that when I was growing up in Kentucky. Frankfort, Kentucky is the capital of Kentucky, and Frankfort's not a very big place at all in comparison to Louisville, and, or as we say there, Louisville, and some other places, but Frankfort is the capital. Thessalonica is the largest city of Macedonia. How long did Paul reason with the Jews in the synagogue? Now, this is in Thessalonica. All right, 3 weeks, three Sabbath days in the synagogue. Now, he was in the city of Thessalonica evidently longer than this because he did a great deal of work among the Gentiles. But he was among the Jews 3 Sabbath days. Number 27, after Paul was driven out of Thessalonica, he traveled to what city?
Berea.
City of Berea. And what did he find in Berea? People willing to study. You know, it's fascinating to me how that in certain geographic locations we have attitudes toward Bible matters that sometimes are different. A friend of mine, and I've talked with you about this before, in fact you've met him, he's held a meeting here, Lowell Blassingame. He and his good friend Albert Dabbs in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, used to make a number of trips to Nigeria. And they were very successful in talking to the Nigerians and very successful in teaching Nigerian preachers. And they found that their most success was in educating the preachers and letting the preachers then teach their own people. That seemed to be most effective. But when they came back to Arkansas, Albert and Lowell both liked to fish, and one day they were fishing out the boat. I forget which one told me this story, but they said they were fishing for a while, and both of them quiet as a mouse, and one said to the other one, "Let's go back to Nigeria." Now, the reason for that was people were receptive to the word in Nigeria, and where they were in Arkansas, they were just preaching their heart out, and it seemed that nobody was listening. The same message in Nigeria was being received. Now, we see this true comparing Thessalonica and Berea. The Jews in Thessalonica were not receptive. The Jews in Berea were willing to study. They wanted to learn. And sometimes we see that true in a geographic location. Paul saw Athens as a city that was given over to what? You know this. What was it given to?
Idols.
Idols. And we talked about the city of Athens, being inland about 2 miles, and on both sides of the highway going into Athens, you've got all these tremendous temples that house the idols that the Athenians worshipped, and Paul declared unto them that God, who made the heavens and the earth, is and all things there, and not worshipped like this. He doesn't live. He doesn't dwell in temples made with men's hands. And so this became an issue that caused opportunity to teach, but it also caused opportunity for controversy. What people considered Athens their first and foremost center for culture and learning. All right, the Greeks, and perhaps why? Would you care to speculate on that? A lot of Greek mythology. The gods that were worshipped there, for the most part, were mythological, Greek mythological gods, and of course served the Greek culture. Who invited Paul to teach them his new doctrine? All right, Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. And this was not something that originated with Paul. It wasn't new because it originated with him. It was new because they hadn't heard it before. And we've got to raise the question, what was new about it?
They hadn't heard it yet.
Well, they hadn't heard it, but the idea of the resurrection, this created a problem. Some believed that, some thought it was foolish to even talk about a Savior that could save people by being raised from the dead. Number 34.
And Mickey, weren't they equally surprised by the idea that there might be one and only one God?
Oh, that was certainly a surprise to them.
Yeah.
Yes, because in that city, chapter 17 tells us that they gave themselves to hear something new. Hear or tell some new thing. And so this was something they hadn't heard before. What city was known for its terrible moral climate? Paul stayed in this city for a year and 6 months. The city of Corinth. In fact, we've used the expression, and historically it was used, to Corinthianize was to become a really bad person, really ungodly and immoral person, to Corinthianize. And you'll notice a list, and this is a passage I want you to remember. We've referred to it many, many times. In fact, in the sermon, going to talk about it again this morning. But it's a passage I want you to remember because it characterizes the kind of thing that existed in Corinth.
Was the terrible immorality of Rome in full force at this point, or did that come later?
That's hard for me to answer. Because you do have, obviously, very, very gross immorality that existed in Rome and was spread out through the empire to one degree or another, better or worse in one city or another. But I don't know that I can answer that question. I'm kind of hung up on it.
Rome is famous for its immorality.
Well, it was. But
most people, you know, say it's why it ultimately fell.
Well, that's right. But was it worse at this time than Corinth? Or was there was it almost there? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But what we do know is the city of Corinth is characterized in the text of, and this is what I'm asking you, 1 Corinthians chapter what? Chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. If you haven't written that down, you write that down. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. Because it tells us the kind of things that the Corinthians engaged in. Now, Joey, back to your question, just a passing thought. In the book of Romans, of course, written sometime later, from this point, the book of Romans was written from Corinth on Paul's third preaching tour. And you might notice the moral climate of those in Rome, reading beginning in Romans chapter 1, verse 18, through the next several verses. And so we have the book of second or first and second Corinthians, written just a little bit later on Paul's third preaching tour. But here we see the condition of Corinth.
What year is this roughly when Paul was here for a year and a half? What year?
When Paul was when he preached in Corinth?
Yeah, when he was here for a year and a half, that was roughly
probably around 50, okay, thereabouts. 55, between that era, because then you've got the second Corinthian letter, I'm sorry, the first and second Corinthian letters, written in the neighborhood of 56, 57, 59, along and through there. So we're within a 10-year perimeter. So that's what makes it so difficult to answer. You know, just how bad down the pike were they? If you'd like to look at Romans chapter 1, you can see some of the things that they were obviously involved in at the time of the writing of the book of Romans from Corinth. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, you won't find it to be very much different from the conditions that existed in Corinth. In verse 20 of Romans chapter 1, it says, "For the invisible things of Him since the creation of the world are clearly seen, being perceived through the things that are made, even His everlasting power and divinity, that they may be without excuse." Now here he's describing the things that existed in Rome. Primarily, of course, among the Gentiles. They're without excuse for the things they're doing. Well, what are they doing? He says, "Because that knowing God, they glorified Him not as God, neither gave thanks, but became vain in their reasoning, and their senseless heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of an image of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things." And then beginning in verses 24 down through about 27, you read of their homosexual practices. And then in verse 28, through the remainder of the chapter, you see a laundry list of things that the Apostle Paul says that they did that caused God to give them up to a reprobate mind.
I guess I always assumed that he was just generically referencing ungodly people in his criticisms in Romans 1. I didn't know that he was targeting the Romans themselves.
Well, the epistle is written to the Romans, and in verse 7, it says, to all that are in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints. This is addressed, of course, to them. The general application, beginning in verse 18, has to be made, but it describes the condition that existed in the Roman world. Now, that wouldn't exclude the city of Rome. These things took place throughout the Roman Empire. Now, to what degree it was worse here or there, I don't know. I just don't know. But we do know that it prevailed in the city of Corinth. Where did Paul preach every Sabbath? All right, in the Jewish synagogue. This was his custom, and we've established that from the early part of the 17th chapter. In Corinth, Paul stayed with what couple? Now, this brings us to Acts chapter 18. Priscilla and Aquila. Why did he stay with Priscilla and Aquila? They were tent makers, yes. That's interesting.
But even to an extent that one of the first people converted in the city was the ruler of the synagogue. And then you see later on, after perhaps another year, there's another ruler of the synagogue. And he's getting blamed for all the fights. It wasn't Paul getting driven out. He being beat in Corinth because of these things. But when they came, the Jews were persecuting Paul. Christians there, they brought him to the council seat.
Very good observation. Very good. Excellent. Any other comments or questions? I'm going through these questions very hurriedly. If you have a question, be sure to raise your hand or speak up so I'll notice you. All right. In Corinth, Paul stayed with Priscilla and Aquila, and we asked the question why? Because they were tent makers. Why did that make any difference to Paul? That's what he did. He also was a tent maker and supplied the needs of himself and those who were traveling with him for the most part through his own labor with his own hands. Number 34, at what city did Paul leave Aquila and Priscilla? This brings us almost up to our current study. Where did he leave them? In the city of Ephesus. That's right. And that brings us to Acts chapter 18, where we have just read. And then, number 35, it took Paul approximately 1 month of sailing time to journey from Ephesus to what city? Caesarea. All right. Why Caesarea? Okay. Caesarea was the dock. In other words, it was the port that Caesar had established. It had been built because the port cities of Tyre and Sidon were very small. And so this was made a man-made harbor by Caesar and named Caesarea. We know, though, that when Paul arrived at Caesarea, it says that he went up and saluted the brethren. Jared? I didn't hear.
I thought it was built by Herod.
No. I think it was built by Caesar, thus named after Caesar. Now, I'll check on that because it may be that that's right, built by Herod. I'll check on that and see. It may be that it was authorized by Caesar, built by Herod. But nonetheless, Paul went to Caesarea, the port, and then went up to salute the brethren in Jerusalem. Now, from Jerusalem, Paul went to what city? All right, he's going back to Antioch of Syria. And that completes the circle, completes the second of the preaching journeys. Now, I want you to look at your Bible very carefully in Acts chapter 18. In Acts chapter 18. Because often when we come to the conclusion or the beginning of another preaching journey, we read of some details. But in this incident, we really don't. It says in verse 22 that when he had landed at Caesarea, went up and saluted the church and went down to Antioch. And having spent some time there, he departed and went through the regions of Galatia and Phrygia in order, establishing all the churches. All we know is that he spent some time in Antioch and he departed. Do you see that? That's the beginning of the third preaching tour. So if you're making notes in the margin of your Bible, you mark that as the beginning of Paul's third preaching tour. Okay? What group of people violently resisted Paul in most every place he visited? That's a no-brainer. All right, the Jews did. Very good. Very good. Yes.
I'm missing something here, but it doesn't say anything, at least in Acts, the 18th chapter, about Paul going to Jerusalem.
No, it does not.
It said he went to Caesarea and then went back up to Antioch.
I'm glad you brought that up. It says that he visited the brethren, went up and visited the brethren, and then went down to Antioch. Would that indicate that the brethren or the church that he saluted were the same brethren? When we use the expressions went up and went down, what does that suggest to us?
Sometimes it suggests that it's talking about Jerusalem, but it's not an absolute.
Not necessarily Jerusalem, but talking about elevation.
Right.
Talking about elevation. And when he arrived at Caesarea, and it says he went up and saluted the church. Well, was there a church that he would go up to from Caesarea? There's no going up.
You'd have to get on the beach.
You'd have to go up in elevation, and Caesarea's sea level. So the probability, most scholars that I've read from on this, or commentators that I've read on this, say that he went up and saluted the brethren in Jerusalem, because that's typically where you would go up from Caesarea. And then he went down from Jerusalem to Antioch. Now, looking on our map, that's not only reasonable, but that's probable. Here's where he arrived. Where is he going? Pardon me? Here's where he arrived. Here's where he's going. When it says he went up and saluted the brethren, where would he likely have gone? The probability is Jerusalem. He went up to salute these brethren in Jerusalem. Yes.
But the rest of the implication comes from verse 21, where he tells the people in Ephesus, I'm on my way to Jerusalem to meet this next upcoming feast.
All right, that's right. That is why he hastens across to here and leaves Aquila and Priscilla here and comes on down. Yeah. Thank you.
Where does it say he's going to Jerusalem?
21.
Verse 21.
Of chapter 18.
Yes. In the American Standard, it says that it omits, I must by all means keep the coming peace in Jerusalem, with the King James and other versions.
Oh, okay.
Include that portion. In
okay.
American Standard doesn't even have a note.
No, that's interesting, isn't it? But it is included in other translations. Okay. That may be why most scholars believe that when he went up, he went to Jerusalem. Okay. Any other questions or comments? We out of time? We've got 5 minutes. We've got 5 minutes. Oh, boy. All right. Well, what I'd like to do at this point is introduce some of the things that I want to be talking about in our next class. Let's see, 48. That's where I want to be. There we go. Now what you see is you're going to be reading further from Acts 18 on into Acts 21. We're going to be looking at some details in this portion of the text. This map, very simply, gives us an image of the preaching of Paul on the third preaching tour. Now we're going to do this a number of times, so I want to just go ahead and start our study with this point. Paul is leaving the third preaching tour from Antioch. Going this way, you see, he's visiting places that he has already been. I want to pause right here because we've noted that in the 18th chapter of Acts, beginning in verse 19 through verse 21, he is in Ephesus only a short time. They desire for him to stay longer, but he's on his way to Jerusalem. But on this third preaching tour, he comes to Ephesus and he spends a considerable amount of time there. We'll talk about how long a little bit later, about 3 years and 6 months, if you're curious. But he spends a whole lot of time in Ephesus. And then he continues to travel up here to Troas and across into Macedonia and down to Corinth. And here he learns that there's a plot to kill him. Now, he could have just gotten on a boat and come back across over this way, but he didn't. Learning of this plot to kill him, he backtracks. Now, why do you suppose he would do that? Well, would you want to be among strangers if you knew your life was being threatened, or would you want to be among brethren? Don't think on that too hard. I'd want to be among brethren, wouldn't you? So he's traveling back this way, on his way to Jerusalem. Now, one of the things that becomes dominant through this third preaching tour is his purpose, not only to preach the gospel, but as he has traveled through Jerusalem, what has he learned about these brethren in the church in Jerusalem? He's learned that many of them are destitute. They don't have the necessities of life, food, clothes. And so as he is traveling on this third preaching tour, it becomes evident that he's talking to the brethren and writing to the brethren about the physical needs of their brethren in Jerusalem. Now that becomes so informative, so many lessons to be gleaned from that. We're going to ask this question now and answer it repeatedly. When Paul is traveling up through here, what is the background of those churches? Mostly Gentiles. That's right. When we talk about the church in Jerusalem, what's the background of those brethren? Jews. Does that present a problem?
Historically, yes.
Now, we've noted on this third preaching tour that Paul writes the epistle to the Romans from the city of Corinth. And you'll note that in the second epistle to Corinth, in the writing of the Roman letter from Corinth, he makes mention of the needs of these in Jerusalem, and calls upon those in Rome to pray for those in Jerusalem that they will receive this collection. Why was there any doubt? Because these folks sending it, they were Gentiles. And the folks that were receiving it, they were of Jewish background. Now, can you imagine taking the disposition that you'd rather go hungry than to receive anything from the hand of a Gentile? That's right. Your brethren. All right, we'll talk some more about that as we study on Wednesday. Lots to be said there.